Hello, and welcome to the Art of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane, and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop, and trust your intuition through interviews with other guests and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I'm your host for the podcast. And today we have got a delightful guest on called David R. Edwards. Now I'm saying his middle name, R, not his middle name, but his initial, because that's the name of the website. So David R. Edwards, but I'm only going to call him David. I'm not going to call him David R. Edwards. Anyway, but you know what to do. Please like, subscribe and share the podcast and let everybody get an understanding of how they can learn to trust their intuition and really get that connection with themselves, the true selves. But with no further ado, I am going to invite David onto the podcast. Hi, David.
Hi.
How are you going?
Thank you.
That's cool. Well, look, let's get straight into it because I know we've had a little chat before we started and you've got so much there and the way you explain things and talk about things I find really, really fascinating. So with the show today, it's all about machines and people and I want to get a clearer understanding of that. But first of all, let's have a little bit of a background about who you are and how you got to where you are today.
So I've worked in healthcare for the last 35 years. And mostly in primary care, although I did about 11 years in cardiology, but I've worked with elderly, I've worked in Africa, I've worked with tribal groups, Native American tribal groups in the U.S. here. So a lot of different things. But over this lifetime, this kind of work experience, about 10, 11 years ago, I really became most fascinated with this idea of whole person care. So when I say whole person care, Susan, what kind of first thing that comes to mind? There's no right or wrong answer, but.
Well, when I look at it, I look at the holistic side of it. So I would look at physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. So, yeah, I go the whole hog.
I love that. That's perfect. And when you were born, let me ask you, and I could answer the same thing, and anybody in the audience, we might ask, right? So if I asked you, when you were born, was your head attached to your body?
I believe it was. I'm a little bit, couldn't quite remember that time, but yes, I believe it was.
We kind of expect it was, didn't we?
Yep.
And so the way healthcare has evolved is it's become so highly specialized. And there's a lot of advantages to that. We have a cardiologist that looks at our heart, and we have an oncologist who helps us with cancer, and we have a rheumatologist, right, who knows about hormones, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all to the infinite levels of detail. In the process of having all this detail and the wonderful benefits that come from that, we have, however, forgotten that we're whole people, right? Our head, our body, our mouth, all the parts are attached and they're connected and they infect each other. And so I thought, if the reality of life is that we are all connected, then the way we should set up our healthcare system is that we should design the health system around the whole person. And we should flex our resources to assist you in being the captain of your own healthcare team. Does that make any sense at all?
Oh, absolutely. I am so with you there. Too many times that we rely on what other people think, even though they have got a lot of the doctor and that side of it, but it almost goes against what we feel. And that's when I go, no, that alarm bell's there.
So it doesn't feel right, does it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And so what we were trying to do was develop a model of integrated primary care. So on a care team, if you, Susan, were the patient, and you came into our door, you might meet with a physician or a nurse practitioner. You might meet with a dentist or a hygienist. You might meet with a therapist or a counselor or a coach or participate in a class or whatever, right? We had all these different resources that we would flex around you and your needs, but our intent was that you would be the captain of the team because, you know, the vast majority of your life is outside of the health center. And so if you can't be the captain of the team, how successful could you possibly be, you know, for the all the time you're not there with all these supports? Does that make sense as well?
Absolutely. Yes. I'm really loving where you're going, David.
Okay. And so this was where I had this epiphany, my first epiphany. And we were in the very fortunate position of building a brand new health center. So it was going to be twice as big. We were going to design it around this clinical model that we had developed. So for example, there was actually a therapist stationed full-time in the dental space because, you know, for decades, people have said some of the most stressful things in the top five is always going to the dentist. So yes. Why not have somebody that can help you deal with the stress where you are at the dentist, just as a simple example. So we were trying to kind of break some boundaries, again, based on what we felt was the reality of life, that you're a whole person. So let's work with you as a whole. Anyways, so as we had a wonderful team of this multidisciplinary team of people who were doing some amazing things in design, great stuff with information systems. And I had this epiphany that, oh my gosh, unless we can help our patients with the skills necessary to be the captain of the team, then we're going to greatly limit our effectiveness, right? Because we can only do what we can do. But then once you leave and you've got the rest of your life, if you don't have some skills, it's going to not work so well, right? We're not going to have this major impact that we were hoping to have. And so I started, because I was a little embarrassed, but after 30 some odd years, I didn't really even know what that meant. So yes. I started to talk to the therapists and physicians and all these various folks and said, well, what do you think those skill sets are? You know, what does that look like even? And then I started reading and researching, and I had my second, I guess, big epiphany was that it's all about intrinsic motivation. And so this is not like a rah-rah speech or I give you a bonus if you do something right. Those are great sources of external motivation, but intrinsic motivation comes from inside of you. You can't buy it. You can't sell it. It's very personal. And so I started to say, okay, well, what are the components of personal motivation then? You know, how do I understand this better? And I left that position that I was at. And so I had time on my hands. And I spent the next 2 years reading and researching and writing and talking to people. And there are three core areas that comprise this intrinsic or personal motivation. You know, this is our drive, what gets us up in the morning, what helps us get through the day, helps us overcome challenges, it helps us understand ourselves better, and it helps us accomplish more, it helps us have more meaning in life, it helps us have more motivation, and it helps us connect with other people better. It's really this amazing, powerful kind of set of principles and skills falling into three areas, which are motivation, something called self-efficacy. So that's like the exercise of control over our life, and self-compassion, which is a more powerful, sustainable source of personal or self-esteem. And so these three areas, I started studying them, and I really discovered that there are 10 core principles. These are enduring principles like gravity and lift and thermodynamics, you know, in nature. But these are principles that guide how human beings work. how we work inside, and how we engage with one another. And it really, I'd been thinking about this for about 20 years, but it really led me to evolve my thinking about the difference between a mechanical kind of view of the world and a mechanical view of human beings and a more natural view. So does that make sense so far?
Yeah, because I sort of feel like we're constantly in either in front of the computer or on our phones, or I just start to feel like we are becoming more and more mechanical. And by not understanding or not sort of tuning in with who we really are and our like you said, the intrinsic values of us or the intrinsic guidance within us, we start to just basically follow this almost mechanical way, isn't it? Because we're on social media and, oh, that's what that person's doing, so I've got to do it that way. And we go against how we actually really feel. But we talked about this earlier. We talked about this mechanical side and this natural side, or this side of nature. I want to get a clearer understanding of that because I found that really fascinating.
Good. So I use the expression, and I'll share it with the rest of the audience, a fish is the last to discover water. The idea here is that a fish lives in this milieu. It happens to be water, but they don't even think about it. It's just there. It's always been there. It's the only thing they've ever known. And so they don't think about it. And yet, as human beings, right, we're really wise to think about the milieu, the environment that we live in. And to great advantage to us, because I'm not saying this is bad. I'm not a Luddite, if you remember what Luddites were in history, but anti-technology. But, you know, 300 and some odd years ago, we started this amazing process of the Industrial Revolution. And this metaphor of the machine started to pervade society. It pervades our language. We talk about, you know, if you work right, you know, and if you're like the cogs and fit in the machine right, then it runs smoothly and we're efficient. And when we get in the car and we drive the car, right, well, if the car gets us from point A to point B safely and quickly and it doesn't break down, right, it's a good car. But if it has a problem, it's a bad car, it's broken, it's flawed, right? We think of things in this way. To think of human beings in this way, however, is super destructive. And we can see the effect on families, on connections between people, on the environment, right? Of a singular focus on this kind of mechanical, efficiency-driven, process-driven kind of a view. With human beings, though, if I say to Susan, hey, Susan, if we get in the car and you want to drive me from Brisbane to Melbourne or from Colorado to Washington State, and then you decide to do something else, right? Do I call you broken? Do I call you flawed? No, because
you might call me other names, though.
yes, exactly. But we don't use these, at least, you know, when we're thinking about it, we don't use these kinds of terms for human beings because we're not machines, right? We're human beings. And so what are the language, right? We talk instead about, you know, fixing the machine, right? We might talk about nurturing human beings. We might talk about connecting with our values. We might talk about seeking to be more self-aware. Right. So these are the kinds of words that describe how human beings work. And when we use those kinds of terms and that kind of thinking, all of a sudden, how we think of ourselves, right? So if I'm a little different, you know, maybe I have a flaw, I'm broken in some way, maybe I'm depressed, or maybe, you know, my right arm doesn't work as well as the left arm, or I've been in an accident or something. I don't think about myself as broken. Like a machine, I think about myself as having a unique challenge, as a part of nature who simply has this situation or these circumstances, and then I have to learn how to work with that and how to deal with it physically, mentally, spiritually, socially, right? As a whole person, But it's, I think we have to get away from this kind of metaphor of the machine, that language is so destructive to just the nature of human beings, how we work and how we interact. Is that reasonably, or any questions or thoughts?
Yeah, no, that's really interesting because, like you say, when we went through this industrial age, it was about like streamlining everything and having everything fit together so it all worked perfectly. But we aren't perfect, and that's the whole beauty of who we are. We're not supposed to be perfect, and we're meant to be who we are. So, yeah, I really get that. And again, when we start to look at the social media side of things, and we're back into those machines again, and we start to see how somebody wants to present themselves on social media, and they're presenting themselves in a particular way, where we look at it and we go, their life is perfect. They do this right. They do that right, you know, and we sort of, we start to judge ourselves and criticize ourselves over that thing. Well, I don't do that right, so I'm not perfect. You know, I'm broken. There's something wrong with me. When that's not how we should be talking or thinking. That's what you're referring to, isn't it, David?
That's exactly right. It's inconsistent with the principles that guide human development and human interaction. So one of the principles, one of these 10 principles, is this idea of our common humanity, right? We are all unique, but we also all have a lot of things in common.
Yes, of course.
And so one of the skill segments in there I talk about is called Comparison is Hell. And to this idea of, like you were talking about on social media, like my friends always on vacation in exotic places. What is wrong with me? I have to work all day, right?
Yeah.
Anytime we start comparing ourselves, or you know, their marriage looks a lot happier than mine because their hair is always made up and they're always saying nice things to each other. But like you said, for most of us, right, we're on social media a little bit and we're putting our best foot forward. This isn't all of life, and it's certainly not reflective of real life for most of us.
Mm-hmm. I remember, David, I went down to babysit my grandchildren, and I was expecting to do the two little ones, and I ended up with the three older teenagers as well.
Oh boy.
And yeah, and it was like I hadn't seen them for a while, and they have their own ways, and they, you know, they do their own things. And anyway, by the end of the week, I was pulling my hair out because I haven't had teenagers for forever. And I really struggled with them. And I remember I had this big blue with one of them, and then I grabbed the two little ones and said, come on, we're going down the beach. Grandma needs some time off. So we went down the beach, and I got onto social media and I said, you know what? Life isn't always rosy. I just had a big fight with my grandson. I feel horrible because I feel like I was meant to be the adult and know the better way to address this instead of just going off the trolley. But I put it there on social media. It was like, no, life isn't always so beautiful and rosy. Life is shit sometimes, and that's the technical term.
I'm sure it's in the textbooks.
Yeah. I think, and I mean, the other aspect is I don't like sharing negativity too much either, so I don't want to get on social media and go, oh, woe is me, right. You know, life's really tough. But in the same token, we've got to be real. We've got to be real and connect. Even if it is on social media, we've got to still connect in a real way if we can.
Yeah.
But hang on, before we go any further, David, I just need to say, for the podcast listeners, David's website, we've got it on the ticker tape going down for the TV show, but David's website is www.davidredwoods.com, which I mentioned earlier. It's funny, when you see it in writing, it looks like David Redwoods, but it's davidredwoods.com.
I won't be offended if they say that.
Yeah. So I get this understanding. So I just want to go back again. Now, the first thing we talked about, you spoke about, was the three core intrinsic Themes,
I guess we could call them.
Insight, yeah.
I would call them themes.
Themes, okay, themes. Motivation, efficacy, and comparison. And I remember when I went to uni, and I went late in life. I was a very late learner. I remember getting my head around efficacy and the simplistic terminology for efficacy I found was the belief that you can achieve it.
That's a beautiful way to think about it. That's the seventh principle, in fact, belief.
Yeah. So I found because efficacy was so much like self-esteem or, you know, that side of things, but it's not the self-esteem because self-esteem can be is different. Self-efficacy is having the belief that you can achieve that. Because if somebody said to me, oh, you've got to give up smoking, and I've gone, well, I won't be able to do that. But I don't smoke anyway, so I would be able to do that. But, you know, it's somebody saying something with and you believing you can't do it, then your self-efficacy is down on that or is low on that. So I wanted to put that there. But we've got those three core themes we talked about, motivation, efficacy, and compassion. Can we just brush over those a little bit more before we go down to any details?
Yeah. So the very first principle, and I wrote these in order, actually, as I understood them better, and I really felt it was useful to sequence them. So they build on top of each other like a ladder, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first step or the first principle is to understand and make our own personal values explicit. So if you think about, like, I'm hungry, that's kind of a vague term. That's how most of us think about our values, right? Yeah, I think, you know, family is important, or I think being honest is important. And we think about this in fairly vague, abstract ways. And so that'd be like thinking, yeah, I'm hungry. I think I'll get some Mexican food, or that sounds good. And then you leave it at that, right? It's not very actionable. It's not very powerful. But if I go, is there Mexican food in Australia?
Yes, there is.
Okay. And so if you say, I'm hungry and I want Mexican food. In fact, I think a chimichanga sounds really good with no guacamole, but extra sour cream and chicken and light on the cheese, right? And I know that La Cantina is open down the block.
Yeah.
And I know that they're open right now and I could actually walk there and I can get dinner. And all of a sudden, right, you've made this vague concept explicit. And all of a sudden it's actionable and it's powerful. And what the research tells us is that if we will take the short amount of time, and it costs nothing to do it, right? So it's free. That's always a bonus. But if I take, and most people can do this within a couple of hours, identify and go through a process, which I describe in the first chapter of the book, my top five core values. And then I make each of those values explicit, which means I understand what that means to me. It doesn't, what it means to my mom or my brother or my spouse or my friends or whatever, right? What does this mean to me? So one of my personal core values is transparency. And to me, that means that I don't have a hidden backdoor agenda. And that when I talk to Susan and I talk about something and I talk to Mary next door, I'm talking about the same thing and I'm saying the same thing. So for me, that's how I define transparency. So I understand what it means to me. And then I describe why that matters, right? What that looks like. I'm sorry. The second step of that is, what does it look like? So in a behavioral way, what does it look like when I'm being transparent? And then the third thing is, why am I better off? You know, why is my life better off for understanding and living this core value? And if each of us would do that, and again, it only takes a couple of hours, what the scientists tell us from research is that we have more meaning in life. We tend to a greater sense of well-being. So that sense that my life is on track, I'm going in the right direction. We are more focused, and we have less regret. Those are nice things, aren't they?
Absolutely. And like as you were saying that, I'm going, one of my core values is honesty. And I see that very similar to transparent, because when you're transparent, people know what's going on. There's no hidden agenda. And honesty, I feel, is this very similar. I never thought of transparency as a core value, but I did think of honesty as a core value. I look at that and I go, well, you know, I like that because there's no hidden agendas. If I'm honest with you, I'm exactly the same as the next person. There's no lies and webs that I've got to build. And why that's important is because I want people to be honest back to me. So honesty is one of those core values. I like how you've really narrowed it down, because I have done core value work and I've worked with clients to do core value, and we get it right down to 5 core values, but I haven't gone any further than that. So those other areas, the why and what does that mean to you, the what and the why, yeah, is so much more important. It just takes it from one level to a much, much better level.
Perfect. Exactly. Yeah. It's more powerful, yes, in our life.
Absolutely.
And isn't that nice that we can have that kind of power? And I think of that, you know, intuition, if we have that clarity and that power in our life, would we not have greater intuition?
Well, as soon as we know more and more about ourselves, it's naturally bringing in that intuition. It's natural. You become aware of those messages that we're getting through because they're relevant to you and you understand them. So it's, yeah, absolutely.
And it's such a, it's so beneficial in so many ways, right? I think of it, and again, trying to use the natural metaphor, rather than thinking of my life or your life or, you know, anybody's listening or watching, right? Think of your life not like a machine, but as a cherry tree, because I love cherries. And so think of it like a cherry tree, though. And so what in a cherry tree, you've got roots and you've got a trunk, and then you've got branches and leaves and fruit, right, during in its season. And what we so often do is we try to get as much fruit as possible, right? That's 99% of what's out on the internet or in textbooks or whatever is like, how do I get more stuff? How do I grow more? How do I increase more? How do I have more effectiveness? How do I get more done, right? It's this kind of a theme. And yet, if you will kind of go on this journey with me, if we build a strong root, wide and deep and very effective, they really bring in lots of moisture and nutrition from the soil, and then a trunk that's thick and vibrant and strong and still flexible, right?
Absolutely.
Think about a life, a human life. We have better times, right? And we have worse times.
Yep.
If you have strong roots and trunk, how will you perform in the bad times, right? So in nature, it might be a late spring or not enough rain, or it's too windy, right? And so the tree might try to blow over. But with strong roots and trunk, a tree withstands those stresses, those trials. In our lives, we have relationship challenges, we have employment challenges, we have financial challenges, we have mental, physical challenges, right? We have lots of things that can happen in our lives that test us, they try us, they challenge us, they give us stress. But if we have a strong core, think of like roots in a trunk, are we not going to be able to withstand those struggles and trials more effectively, more quickly get over them, rise above them even? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. this is for the funny part, David. I actually do flower readings and tree readings. So people actually draw themselves as a tree, and then we talk about the roots, and we talk about the trunk and the branches. And with the flowers, I make the flowers are your goals in life, your emotional goals. So when they draw their flowers or they choose a flower image, we can read that and we go, okay, well, this is what your intuition is saying. This is what you're looking at. So very, very on point for what I do. And I love how you've described that, because honestly, if we don't have the foundations, that's not just in life, that's in business, in anything we do. If we don't have strong foundations, if we don't have those good roots and that good, the good trunk, we are going to have a lot of issues, and that trunk does need to be flexible. That was really important too. So love that analogy.
Exactly. And our traumas tend to be less catastrophic. Maybe catastrophic. Let's try that word. Yeah. They're less catastrophic for us, right? We get over them more quickly. And that's always a wonderful thing. But then let's go to the opposite. Let's say that things are going well, right? Life is good. Things are all seem to be lined up and we're doing all right. What happens with a tree with a strong roots and deep, wide, productive, effective, broad, deep, effective roots and a strong and flexible trunk? Well, when times are good, right, so the water's right and the sunlight is right and the wind is right and all that stuff, that tree will outproduce, outperform, be more successful, more happy, more connected than any tree with weak roots and trunk still, right? Even in the good times, in other words, we're still way better off.
Absolutely.
So it's not like it's just for the hard times. It's really for all times and all seasons. Having some focus on the roots and the trunk benefit us.
Absolutely. And so when you're referring to the roots and the trunk, you're referring to these core themes or these core, the value, and not just the values, because values is part of it, but these three core themes of motivation, efficacy, and compassion. That's how we're going to build up our roots and our base and our trunk. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And I'll go through these. I know we're getting short on time, but so like the second principle, again, these are like stepping stones or like going up the stairs, right? Yep. So the second one, once we've got explicit values, right, we've got that foundation built, think of down really in the roots there. We have self-awareness and general awareness. So like not only of ourselves, but also of our environment around us. So awareness is a second principle. So it builds on values. Then the third principle is learning. So this idea that I have experiences, some successful, some not, but I can learn from all of them, right? So we're building more foundations.
Yep.
Then intent or intention. So this idea that my intent makes all the difference in the world, right? Absolutely. What is my, it's kind of like visioning, if we think about that. I think you can think of it like in businesses, we talk about developing a vision statement. Sorry. We think about as a human being, as a person, what is my intent? What is my vision? And then the last two that fall under self-efficacy is planning. So that's making plans that start to describe how we're going to make our intentions a reality. And then the doing, which is where we take those plans and we actually carry them out. And I should say there is one more principle. The last principle is belief. It is a critical framework, that sense that if I believe I can do something, I may be successful at it or I may not, right? Yeah. But if I don't believe I can do something, I never get out of the starting blocks, right?
Absolutely.
I will never get a start, because if I don't believe I can do it, I will never start and I will certainly never persevere.
Yeah.
And so belief is the sixth self-efficacy principle, and they build on each other.
Yeah.
And then we get into, so that's really, getting the root ball, getting strong and vibrant. And then we've kind of grown up and we're starting to build the trunk a little bit. Now, the balance to self-efficacy, because life should be about balance. We don't want to be out of balance.
Yeah.
Is self-compassion. So self-compassion has three core principles. The first being self-kindness. And it's so common for us to, when we make a mistake or we mess up or we forget something or we whatever, right? We say all kinds of really mean things to ourselves that we would never say to a close friend.
Absolutely.
And so the idea of self-kindness is that I'm going to learn to speak to myself like I would with a close friend. And what the research tells us is that when I beat up on myself, if I berate myself, I've actually decreased my capacity to then overcome the thing I was beating myself up for. So I've not only got the mistake or the challenge or the problem or the flaw or whatever it is, I've then decreased my ability to overcome it or to be more successful by beating up on myself. Yeah. But if I am kind to myself, like a close friend would be, I actually increase my capacity to deal successfully with that challenge. And so this is a very powerful concept that starts to get you the balance. It starts to say, I'm a human being. I'm not a machine. Self-kindness is really important as a core principle. The second one is our common humanity, which we talked about a little bit earlier. And the final, so the third principle under self-compassion, and the final balancing factor, you know, you get your self-compassion, you got your self-efficacy built on these values, is what I call mindlessness.
Oh, so nice.
What do you think I might be thinking when I say mindlessness?
Well, I would be going to, like, that's sort of how I feel when I'm doing my meditations, and that it's just like nothing but everything at the same time. It's, yeah, it's just, it's very, very blissful. Very, very, it's, yeah, actually, it's really strange. The terminology you're using is just amazing, because as soon as you say that, I feel it. Like, you say mind blissfulness and it's like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm not explaining it very well, but I know what you're talking about.
There you go. Well, and when I titled the chapter, it was nothing as profound and beautiful as what you just said. But I had watched a Dr. Phil episode. Is Dr. Phil down in Australia?
Yes, we have Dr. Phil too down here, yes.
Okay.
We're not that behind, you know.
And so he was doing an interview, actually. And he said, I was talking to somebody about mindfulness or being mindful. And he said, and it was like, woo, 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 you know, that's craziness. And my audience, when I was writing the book, was similar to the people that I served in my career in healthcare, who were largely lower income people with some more significant challenges, perhaps, or barriers to overcome. And so a lot of these people that I'm trying to connect with and trying to help by introducing these principles and some really simple skills under each of those principles, I felt like they might see mindfulness and then check out. It's like, oh my gosh, she's going to talk about Ayurvedic or yoga pants or lighting candles and incense or something. And no, that's not me. And so my intent, going back to the fourth principle, was to have something that would keep them curious long enough for me to ask them a question. If I titled the chapter Mindless, but you have a mind and I have a mind, it cannot possibly be the lack of a brain, right? Because we have all got a brain.
Yes.
So what in the world do we mean by mindless?
Mm.
Well, it's the opposite of being mindful. And what scientists tell us is that the human mind, with its trillions and trillions of connections, is the most complicated, the most complex creation in all of the universe.
Yeah.
More than anything you can think of, the sun or the stars or the moon. Our mind is the most complex thing in the universe. This amazing gift that we have. And how could we possibly think that it's an advantage to not use it, right?
Exactly.
So to me, what I wanted to try to get across to folks is that to have a brain and not use it is the greatest disservice that we could ever think of. We want to use our brain, in other words, to be mindful. So let's get over the biases, let's get over the baggage and say, okay, wear yoga pants, don't wear yoga pants, light candles, don't light candles. No, it doesn't make any difference, right? All we're talking about is using our minds in ways that make our lives better, more effective, more connected. And if we can kind of start the chapter that way, I share, you know, some very simple introductory ideas about ways to be more mindful. No yoga pants required.
Maybe a candle or two, but no yoga pants.
There you go.
That is really cool. What I want to say, actually, because people that are watching the video can see the book, because I've got that on the ticker tape down the bottom, and it is New You Who Knew by Richard R. Edwards. David R. Edwards. Where did I get Richard from? And you can get it on Amazon. You can get it on your site, davidredwards.com. So
yes.
In the book, New You Who Knew, does it have all your principles in there? Is this what we're talking about from your book?
Yeah. So this is what it looks like. So if you see the cover there.
Yeah.
And it has all 10 principles. So there's an introduction. I talk a little bit about my story and kind of how I got there. And then we really dive right in and we talk about values is the first chapter. And then, you know, 2 through 7 are those self-efficacy principles that we went through. Mm-hmm. And then within each chapter, there are skill segments.
Yeah.
And again, this is an introduction. This isn't the master course on any of these.
Yeah.
But because really we're building these foundations, right? Mm-hmm. And once we've got them, you know, then somebody, because everybody's going to be different who reads this. And I really wanted to respect, you know, the uniqueness and the individuality. And if they kind of build the very basics of each of these kind of principles in their life, then they might go, you know, I really want to get into my values and I want to make that more powerful and understand that even better. Or I really want to study intentionality, right? What does that really mean? I want to understand it better and really get into that. Or, you know, I'm really good about being kind to myself, but I can't carry out a plan to save my life, right? So they want to get into doing, right? And so, but with these foundations built, they can do that. And anything they try in any of these areas will be more successful, right? Because, and I didn't invent these, right? I mean, Socrates talked about being intentional, right? Yep. I mean, we've talked about values forever, but I couldn't find anybody, because otherwise I would just be selling somebody else's book. But I couldn't find anybody else who had said, these are the three themes that really comprise intrinsic motivation. This is how it ties into the normal lives of average, everyday human beings in Australia or the United States or anywhere where you're listening. They're universal. You don't have to have an education level. You don't have to have an income. You don't have to be rich or famous. You don't have to have a last name that's well known. None of that external stuff. It doesn't make any difference at all. These principles are applicable and useful to all of us, which it was just really rewarding for me to kind of discover that, you know, like at a health center with a lot of lower income patients, that they could use these principles to be the captain of their care team. But since those principles apply equally well and effectively to all domains of their life, personal, spiritual, work, health, mental, all of these areas, that they would be the captain of their life. And it was just like almost overwhelming how powerful it was. I get way excited about the potential and how it can unleash all of these positive things and really protect us from the massive amount of influence that's trying to be wielded through all of the social media and advertisements and, you know, all the kind of fads that happen, you know, throughout our lives. And it's there's such powerful foundations for any life, and you deserve it. You know, whoever is listening to this, your life is important. You deserve to have these principles in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing too, what when you're talking about it, so you're talking about these as being your basic foundations, but we all know that a tree doesn't grow a great big solid trunk overnight as soon as it shoots. We need to grow. The roots are always continuing. We're always learning. We're always getting better understandings. We're always growing and developing. And each time we do get that knockback, or we do have to flex with the with situations, it helps us become stronger. So, yeah, I really love that understanding. If you want to know more about, you know, what were some of the things like the belief, understanding the belief, you know, you can go into that in a lot deeper ways. Understanding self-care or self-kindness, we can go into that again a lot deeper. So that's really amazing. But, yes, we are getting a little bit low on time now, David. So I have to ask you to wrap it up. Have you got anything else you want to say before you go, before we say goodbye?
I think I said it. So thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. And I love, that was a great end, frankly. As human beings, we don't generally react well to quick fixes.
Yes.
Right? So be patient and kind to yourself. Be consistent and know that this is a lifelong journey. And if a listener is 20 years old, congratulations. You know, you've got the vast majority of your life ahead of you. What an amazing time to attach and engage with these principles. Yes. If you're 80, it doesn't matter. You can still engage with them. They're still as effective, right? Be Absolutely. Patient, though. Be kind and know that you might be in really challenging circumstances or really easy, right? Don't compare yourself to somebody else. You know, be yourself.
Yeah. Don't be mechanical. Be natural.
There you go.
Yeah. Thank you so much, David. That was really cool. I've got to close it off. Hang on. Don't go away, though. Stay there. Okay. Oops, hang on. Wrong button. I've got to press this button, I think. Yep. Hey, guys, that was amazing. Grab that book, Knew You, Who Knew by David R. Edwards. It's just a simple cover, but it's got so much depth and understanding in it. Those three areas that we go through, and we go right deep down into them. It's really, really, it's basic living. And those areas in your life that you feel like you're missing out on, it's going to be in that book, I can assure you. After talking about it and going through those principles, I can guarantee it'll be in that book. So get it and keep going from there. But that's all from me now. I do ask you to share, like, or subscribe to the show. And what have we got coming up? What can I share with you? Just jump on Intuitive Personal Development Facebook group and get a free flower reading from me. It's really fun. You'll enjoy it. All right, that's me for now. I'm going to say goodbye and have a great week. Bye, guys.